This is China Africa Talk. I'm Gao Junya. From April the 7th to July the 4th, 1994, over 1 million Tutsis, an ethnic minority in Rwanda, were killed in a genocide orchestrated by the government. An average 10,000 people perished every day during a period of 100 days. This year marks the 30th anniversary of the genocide in Rwanda. April the 7th is also the International Day of Reflection on the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda. The UN established this occasion in 2003. What are some of the lessons we can draw from the tragedy of the brutal killings?
I think the important lesson here is going back to our civilization, the values of coexistence, and finding pathways to resolve our disputes and conflicts.
Fast forward 30 years, what factors enable Rwandans to heal their wounds and transform their nation into one of the most sought-after foreign investment destinations in Africa?
Despite this terrible past, Rwanda has made tremendous progress in all aspects of national life, in terms of rebuilding itself and picking pieces from ashes and becoming an effective state.
I caught up with Rwandan ambassador to China, James Kimonial, to find the answers. What are some of the lessons we can draw from the Rwanda genocide?
I think a very important lesson to draw from the genocide that was committed against the Tutsi in Rwanda is that genocide doesn't happen overnight. There is a process. There are stages that this crime has to follow before it happens. So you find discrimination policies in place, classification of people, characterization, dehumanization of the people to be killed, polarization of societies and communities, planning of extermination and denial of genocide. So all these stages, when you look at the case of Rwanda, were followed. And therefore, in any society, anywhere in the world, once you see the signals and signs of discrimination persistent in a particular communities, then you have to begin to pay attention. That's why I emphasized on the fact that we have to be very conscious and be very careful with anything to do with hate speech and any toxic narrative that is meant to discriminate a particular group of people with the intention, because genocide is characterized by the intent to commit killings based on the identity of a particular group of people. So this is a very, very important lesson. The reason why I'm saying this is because we see around us a lot of hate speech happening, a lot of narratives that are similar to what happened in 1994. And we warn people, if you are not careful, if you are not paying serious attention to these narratives, then you are likely to fall into the same trap like what happened in Rwanda in 1994.
Were you personally also a victim of the notorious genocide? Would you mind sharing your story, or can you relate the experiences of someone you know?
I mean, Rwandans of all walks of life have been affected by the genocide in one way or the other, but me personally, I was not being hunted down because I was not in Rwanda at that time. But so many Rwandans have lost their relatives, have lost their family members, have lost property, have been disabled, traumatized because of this horrendous tragedy that took place in 1994. So we all had to come together, of the survivors, the perpetrators, and other people, Rwandans from all backgrounds, to work together towards building our unity, because that's a foundation of sustained peace.
Our world is still marred by different conflicts and instability. What messages would you like to deliver to those who ignite such turmoil, emphasizing the preciousness of peace?
I think the important lesson here, as I said earlier, is going back to our civilization and the values of coexistence, and finding pathways to resolve our disputes and conflicts. Because waging wars and entrenching hate has never been a solution to any problem. And we should strive, we should work together to make sure that we protect our communities from such crimes like hate speech, the spread of genocide ideology, and begin to look at ways of resolving our disputes and differences in a peaceful way, because I think coexistence is what is going to drive us into a place where we can peacefully live together and work together for our common interest. So that's very important. Another important lesson is the fact that we still see weaknesses within global governance institutions, because you may want to know that in 1994, when just about before the genocide happened, the UN Force Commander, General Romeo Dallaire, warned the United Nations Security Council that genocide was being planned against the Tutsi. Still happened, even during the time when it was happening, instead of reinforcing the troops on the ground, they withdrew the forces, only leaving the victims at the hands of their killers. So what you are seeing around us in different regions, we need to reactivate multilateralism, make sure that United Nations peacekeeping systems are active instead of being passive, to make sure that we protect citizens who are in danger, especially those who are at the verge of extermination. So activating national, regional, and international mechanisms to make sure that we prevent or at least protect people in the case of violence is very, very important, because Rwanda suffered, you know, the loss of 1 million people within 3 months because there was nobody to intervene.
Yeah, we also know that Rwanda has become a favored destination for Chinese investors. Ambassador, in your opinion, what distinguishes Rwanda from other African countries?
Well, this is a period of mourning and the commemoration of a genocide 30 years later. Despite this terrible past, Rwanda has made tremendous progress in all aspects of national life in terms of rebuilding itself, picking pieces and from ashes and becoming an effective state. And this is thanks to a very effective and visionary leadership of our country and His Excellency President Paul Kagame. The country has been able to transcend all the differences that divided us and embarked on a socio-economic transformation journey. And I want to acknowledge and appreciate the government of China and the people of China for accompanying Rwanda throughout this journey. Ever since genocide happened, China has been on the forefront in terms of supporting our reconstruction and development phases. And as we speak today, the Chinese government is supporting a lot of projects in terms of infrastructure, technology, agriculture, education, and health. And talking about private investment, we have seen growth in foreign direct investment from Chinese enterprises to the point where now China is leading the rest of the world in terms of contributing to our foreign direct investment. I think the second is India, the third is United States. So the reason why Chinese enterprises choose Rwanda is precisely because of the excellent relations we have with China, but also for our country, our government, having created a very positive and conducive environment for business to take place. So the fast transformation that Rwanda has experienced in the last 30 years is precisely because the government has put in place mechanisms and instruments to ensure there is peace, but also there is a good business environment to attract the foreign capital, because we believe in private sector-led growth. And so supporting private enterprises gives a lot of impetus to investors, which contributes then to our economic transformation.
Yeah, many people say Rwanda is becoming the Singapore of Africa. We know the Rwanda government is rolling out a number of policies, like you said, to improve the business environment. And personally, I know Rwanda Airlines has been opening many routes to different countries across Africa. And I also know that you've been engaged in live streaming to promote Rwanda products. Actually, a lot of friends around me, they've been enjoying the coffee from Rwanda. And we also know that Rwanda is an active participant of the China International Import Expo. So, in your opinion, in what areas do you see more potentials to be tapped into when it comes to bilateral trade and business?
Thank you for the question. I have to say that Rwanda's economic model is not unique per se, but it is a model that is based on our homegrown solutions, given our own peculiar conditions, but also benchmarked on other countries, Singapore, China, India, you know, to see what can be adapted in our own environment, but of course, mainly building on our own peculiar situation, as I said. And of course, it's very important to have the leadership that has that vision. It's not about having vision or strategic plan, but it's about executing the plan. That's the reason why all the reforms that had to be undertaken within the last couple of decades have been undertaken, and those reforms have created the environment for business to happen, whether it's investment or trade. Talking about increasing our exports to China, of course, China has done extremely well in terms of continuing opening up, not only for Rwanda or for Africa, but for the rest of the world. And because of that opportunity, we have taken up the advantage and the opportunities that the Chinese market offer to our products. And that's why we've been participating fully in China International Import Expo, CIE, that takes place every November in Shanghai. We have been very active participants of China Africa Economic and Trade Expo, CAET, that takes place every 2 years in Changsha, and many other exhibitions. And of course, for us, we've moved faster to now look at what China is doing in the area of digital economy. The e-commerce component is becoming a new frontier in terms of doing business. So we've been engaged with Chinese technology platforms to market our products, live streaming and so on, which has increased the volumes of our products, whether it is tea or coffee and tea in the Chinese market, and we want to do more. Of course, we're encouraging Chinese companies to come and invest in Rwanda to increase production so that you can take advantage of this vast market of China.
Yes, you just mentioned e-commerce. We also know that cooperation in green economy, in green transformation is also picking up over the years. I know in Kenya, a lot of Boda Boda riders, they've been changing their motorcycles into e-motos. I don't know if this is the same picture there in Rwanda. What role do you think China can play in Rwanda's green transformation?
Definitely. I mean, our environmental protection strategic plan has different milestones, because we want to reduce the carbon emission by 30% come 2035 and become carbon neutral by 2050. And in between, there are so many things that have to be implemented, including green transportation, as you're talking about motorcycles. Already in Rwanda, we have so many of them. And we have Chinese companies that are going to set up assembly of electric buses and electric cars, so that we begin now to reduce emissions. Of course, there is an aspect of renewable energy. We have Chinese companies, and we are working with the government of China. The government of China is intending to support their solar energy access to power, especially in the remotest areas of Rwanda. And then we're working with Chinese companies to invest in the afforestation, in the bamboo, development in the country, so that the combination of all those interventions are going to mitigate the emissions and therefore achieve sustainable environment. And of course, we look at so many other aspects, especially in the area of agriculture. There is demonstration centers supported by China, which also supports best practices in agriculture, which we call climate resilience agriculture, also supported by China. So that's also an important aspect of what we do together.
Last but not least, Your Excellency, a new meeting of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation will be held in Beijing later this year. What proposals will Rwanda bring to the table of this year's talk?
We are preparing to participate in the upcoming ninth session and the summit of Forum on China-Africa Cooperation. And we will be sharing our ideas and views into the outcome document, which will definitely cover the key areas of interest. And this, you find that most African countries will be presenting more or less the same, especially in the infrastructure and connectivity, where we need to be linked within the regions and African continent, but also to the sea, to be able to increase our exports and the trade. We'll be presenting the proposals on how we can partner on technology, because we want to run an economy which is driven by technology, and we think China, because of the advancements that has made in the area of technology, that's an area that we'll be looking at. Education is very critical, because human capital development is part and parcel of everything we do, and we think we'll continue to work with China in the area of education to increase and equip skills with, the young people with cutting-edge skills in different domains, especially in the area of science and technology. We'll be looking at health and environment, and of course security issues. Those are the cross-cutting issues that we think we'll be presenting during the upcoming FOCAC, and I know the government of China is also in high gears to prepare what is going to be announced again in the next 3 years going forward.
Today, Rwanda enjoys political stability and economic prosperity. It's ranked second as the easiest country to do business in Africa, and is recognized as the sixth safest country globally. The lessons of the 1994 genocide are a stark reminder to all. Unity and peace are treasures that demand vigilant guarding. And that brings us to the end of this episode of China Africa Talk. You can visit our website, radio.cgtn.com, or search our program on major podcast platforms to listen to our previous episodes. If you have any feedbacks or thoughts, contact us with email, radio@cgtn.com. I'm Gao Junya. Thank you for listening.